Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Strong Municipal Libraries Podcast, where we talk to you about the books we'd like to recommend.
And we are bringing to you a holiday edition of All Booked, where Cherie is going to talk about one of her all-time favorites, Hogfather.
Yeah, so Hogfather is written by Terry Pratchett. Terry Pratchett is known for fantasy novels, and this is in his Discworld series. It's his most famous series. There are over 40 Discworld books, and this is number 20. It's right smack in the middle. And in a set of five of those books that follow the same character, it's number 3, also smack in the middle.
It's the middle.
It's the middle of the middle of the middle, but I think that it can be read as a standalone.
So there's not too much tying it to the previous books that would confuse the reader?
There's a lot tying it to previous books, but I don't think you necessarily need to have read them to enjoy the story.
Okay.
Which I feel like there are a number of his novels that do stand alone so that you can kind of jump in whenever.
Because there's always stuff in novels you don't know, so.
And part of what's special about this is it's one of the few fantasy novels that has Christmas-y themes.
Correct. A few years ago, I tried to do a Christmas display here, and I was desperately looking through science fiction and fantasy, looking for books with a Christmas theme. Oddly enough, worlds set in other universes, books set in other universes and other worlds and other theologies don't feature Christmas stories very much.
Weird.
Which I'm betting this actually presents its own take on it as well.
It does. Terry Pratchett is, what he does a lot is satirize. So he satirizes our world. He satirizes 1980s fantasy tropes. And this Hogfather character is loosely based on Father Christmas, the British Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's very loosely.
Are there any striking similarities or differences that you can share with us that won't spoil anything?
I did not study up on Father Christmas overly much. The striking similarities... Okay. are the Hogfather does run around the world in a single night delivering toys to good girls and boys.
Oh, that's nice.
The Hogfather does come down the chimney, and he does travel around in a sledge, but his sledge is pulled by 4 hogs.
Okay, I was wondering where the hog part came in. I was hoping he was part pig. But
that is one place that the hogs come in for the Hogfather.
Okay.
And if you've ever watched the BBC adaptation of Hogfather, and Leslie, if you haven't, I have my own copy I can lend you.
Awesome.
You get to see how he's visually represented by the BBC. There may be tusks involved. So the premise of this book is that the Hogfather, during Hogswatch season, seems to have gone missing. I mean, what? It's Hogswatch time and the Hogfather is missing. Why? What is going on? And what's going on is the auditors of reality don't like when things are untidy and they don't like chaos.
So it's like the HOA for the fantasy universe.
The HOA of Discworld does not like untidiness as represented by fantasy and stuff. So they commissioned an assassin to kill the Hogfather. And the Hogfather has disappeared, but in the Discworld universe, there are anthropomorphic personifications of various things, including death. And the character of Death is the one with 5 books that follow him and his adventures. And he's a pretty good guy.
Yes, I know. He's actually one of my favorite characters. I read all of his stories.
I love Death. So in this reality, Death has noticed there's a problem, and he's stepping in to fill the gap. So there's nothing like your Hogfather at the local mall being a talking skeleton with a pillow down his front. He's trying to hold a place in the world for the Hogfather to come back.
So kind of Nightmare Before Christmas.
I was just thinking that, like, very Nightmare Before Christmas-esque.
Perhaps. I mean, this book, if you want a straight narrative from beginning to end that absolutely flows along a defined plot line and only one set of characters, this isn't your book. This book follows several subsets of characters, and that's where, if you've read other Terry Pratchett books, you'll recognize the wizards. The wizards have some plots. You'll recognize a couple of the assassins. The Night Watch gets a tiny cameo. You'll recognize some of these characters as they come in and out of the story, but the people really driving the story are Death and Death's granddaughter. Yes, he has a granddaughter, Susan Stohelet.
Is that his motivation for making sure the Hogfather stays around?
Death's motivation for this is that Death believes that humans need fantasy to be human, to be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape.
Ah.
More specifically, that humans need to believe in things like the Hogfather as practice to believe the little lies so that later they can believe the big lies like justice and mercy and duty.
Oh my gosh. So is the Hogfather not real in this world, or just not provable by humans?
In the Discworld universe, gods and anthropomorphic personifications survive, grow, evolve, and thrive based on belief.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a certain age when kids start getting real cynical and maybe not so much believing, but yet professing to believe in Father Christmas or the Hogfather. The trouble for these anthropomorphic personifications and deities in the Discworld universe is that if you lose enough believers, you kind of start to go poof.
But does he actually deliver presents?
Yes.
I feel like that's proof, though. All the kids are just like...
You're forgetting the assassin who was hired to figure out a way to kill the Hogfather.
Oh.
And that magic is a real thing.
Okay.
And that spells can be done that, you know, might play a plot point in this story.
I was very confused. I was just like, if I just got a present, I'd be like, well, clearly Santa is real or a burglar got in my house and unburgled me.
Except that all the kids start talking at the playground about how Hogfather isn't real and it's really your father, really.
But then the father would be like, no, I didn't get you that present. Okay, not important. Not important. I'm sorry. I got sidetracked.
This probably should have come with a caveat. Do not listen to this episode with your children.
Oh, gosh. We should put that in the front.
Right. Let's do that. Do not listen to this episode with your children.
I'll make sure to put a note. Don't worry.
There we go. Just ride in the car. Just a bunch of adults on the podcast are just like, well, we all know Santa's not real.
Let's not do that to the poor children.
Oops.
So belief is important.
Or the poor parents.
Learning to believe in things that may not be provably real is important. So that later you can believe in things like truth and justice.
Even though there's no proof of it.
Right, grind the universe down and you'll never find a particle of duty or a particle of mercy, but we believe that these are things that are real and important.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Death's granddaughter a little bit. She's grown in this book, right?
Yes, this is the middle of the three. This is a theme here, middle. This is the middle of the three books dealing with Susan Stohelet and her story arc. How in the world does Death, a walking, talking skeleton, have a granddaughter? Well, Death adopted a baby in a previous book. That girl grew up, married a young man who had been Death's apprentice for a little while, and they, both being human, had a daughter. That daughter is Susan Stohelet. And there is no reason, a theme of hers is that some genetics is through the soul, not all just the squiggly biology, because there is no biological reason that she should be able to walk through walls sometimes, or talk that talk and stalk that stalk, or do the things that Death does, but she can. So Susan is trying desperately to live a normal life. She just wants to be her own person and achieve things on her own terms and be mortal and human, darn it. And she's doing this. I should mention that her parents were a duke and duchess, so she's technically a duchess, but that was just a little embarrassing when she got a job as a nanny and the family found out. So she is being a nanny. She's about, I think, 19 in this book, and her job is to take care of these two kids, and she's great with children, much to her own dismay. The little boy was being a brat until she got him off of the books about Sea Spot Run and onto the campaigns of General Tacticus. And the little girl was desperately afraid of the monster under the bed until Susan hauled it out from under the bed, hit it with the nursery poker, and kicked it out the front door. So she's really good with kids. And she is in the nursery when the Hogfather, Death, comes down the chimney. And she can't believe it. Are you kidding me, Grandfather? What the heck? What are you doing?
You can't drop my work like this.
Basically, what are you doing? The real Hogfather won't even fit in the room if we don't just... What are you doing? And Death is like, I cannot tell you about this. It is not your concern. There is nothing for you to do. Goodbye. Anyone who's ever, like, known a teenager...
Mm-hmm.
Or who's ever been in a family knows that you tell a human teenager,
don't think about this. It's not important for you.
It's not your concern. Don't get involved.
Yeah. Of course, the first thing you do is like, I need to figure out what's going on.
It's just like for the for mature labels or rated R.
Oh, yeah.
Always gonna be
enticing. I need to know why.
Exactly. And that is part of Death's plan all along, because Death has a good idea of what's going on and where it's going down, but it's not a place Death can go.
Ah, so he was just like a parent talking in the room like, oh, we can't let our child do this. It would be so dangerous if our child did the dishes themselves.
So this, to rescue the Hogfather, you need a human, because the Hogfather is sort of a human creation. Over time. So Susan Stohelet, without her, this book would not have a, let's call it a happy ending. But yet without Death, there wouldn't even have been a chance for anyone to try to save anything or notice that there was a problem, because he's the one who noticed there was a problem.
It's a team effort.
Yes. So Susan, much to her own dismay, has to stop time, leave the kids in the nursery, go off and figure out what is up with my grandfather. What is he doing?
Why is he dressed as Hogfather?
Exactly.
So is this kind of a book about what do you think are the themes of this book, other than like belief and things like that? Because it feels like family is kind of important, perhaps.
Family is important.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a good Christmas book? Like, does it reinforce those Christmas season values of like family and
this takes a few of the traditional Christmas tropes and challenges them. Mm-hmm. There's a Christmas story about the little match girl. And you just did the thing.
Yeah.
So in the traditional story of the little match girl,
so upsetting.
She dies and is carried off to heaven where everything is nice. Death doesn't think that's how it should go.
Oh, no.
Exactly. And then there's the theme in Christmas season and in Hog's Watch around generosity. But what is generosity really?
Mm-hmm.
And is it bringing your leftovers to a person who has less material wealth than you and demanding that they take it and be grateful for it, darn it, or is it something different?
Mm-hmm.
So a few of our tropes and our assumptions around generosity, around help, around the holiday season and around our traditions get challenged in the course of this book. And what is who is a hero in any given situation? So I would say family, good over evil. What does evil actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
And is it important for kids to see that good triumphs over evil? I mean, at one point, the assassin says, if my enemy is death, how can I possibly be the bad guy?
But I mean, anyone
kids
who's
are not necessarily fooled.
Yeah.
So are there any other specific Christmas tropes that this book kind of pokes fun at?
Just set during winter?
Writing letters to Santa.
Okay.
A little bit. Making a list and checking it twice. At one point, the little girl in the story has written a letter to Santa on pink paper with green crayon and a little piggy in the corner. And Death, of course, has received this letter and is reading it, or pulls it out in the nursery with Susan. And Susan says, I feel I should point out that she chose that to make the Hogfather think she was sweet.
That's funny.
So there's a
Do they leave treats for Santa, Hogfather?
Well, for the Hogfather.
Do you leave, like, meal?
Children leave turnips for the hogs that pull the sledge.
Of course.
And a pork pie for the Hogfather.
Dang!
And Sherry. Wait,
but if he has tusks and stuff and is maybe somewhat porcine, isn't
Let
that
it go.
Like, okay.
Yep.
Let it go.
Well.
They leave Sherry and pork pies for the Hogfather and turnips for the hogs.
Okay. Dang, this is a fancy Santa.
Yeah, it is.
So if you're going to read this book and you want food, order a British pork pie.
There you go.
From Goodwood's Bakery in Houston, or from, they're not a bakery, they're a British importer. Order a British pork pie from somewhere.
There you go, and some sherry.
And have some sherry or your preferred tipple of
there you go.
Choice.
And you too can be the Hogfather.
Or have an empanada or something if you're not up for a British pork pie.
The Hogfather was inside you all the time.
Oh my gosh.
You did go there.
So I know that you have read all of the Terry Pratchett books, I think.
I've probably read over 30 of them. I don't think I've read all of them.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think this one holds up compared to the others?
Just content-wise.
This one is in my top 10%.
Okay.
I own my own copy of the paperback, my own copy of the DVD, my own copy of the download audio, by the way.
Oh, that's true. You really do like it, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is why when y'all said, hey, anybody want to talk about a book? I could talk about this one all day. So the narrators for the Discworld audiobooks, if y'all have never tried them, by and large are really, really good. I've only had one stinker narrator, and she only did a couple of the books. So I would say this is in my top 10%. Because I have read so many of the books, it's hard for me to say with absolute assurance that you can absolutely start with this book and not be terribly confused. I can absolutely tell you there's a bunch of different storylines interweaving to get to the main story and to get to the end. I can tell you that I think it stands on its own, but I've been close to this world and this story for a very long time now, so
yeah.
Please don't come at me with pork pies and sherry if I'm wrong.
I mean, you can, just gently.
Offer them to me on a plate. Please don't throw them at my head.
Yeah, I have to admit, you were mentioning the narrators. I made the mistake of taking the audiobook version of Guards Guards on a road trip that I had to make, and I almost got in a wreck. I was laughing so hard, but it was highly entertaining.
One of the worst audiobooks I ever had, and they've changed this for the download version. When I was first getting into audiobooks, they had Thief of Time, which was the fifth book Linked to Death and featuring Susan Stowe-Hellett. And that book used the sound of shattering glass as a section break in its audiobooks.
Oh, man.
Mm.
Talk about almost getting in a wreck when I took that on a road trip.
Yep.
They've changed that sound transition for the downloads. Thank God they just say, like, ting or something instead of having glass shatter, because I guess they got a lot of feedback from all the people who listen to books while driving.
I feel like that's a majority of people who listen to audiobooks do it when they drive, so
yes, drive,
I'm always very confused when they have like horrific car related sounds.
I was very twitchy with that book, but this is obviously British fantasy. A lot of the humor can be very British. I've had to look up a bunch of words when I felt, what the heck is a Swede anyway? In the context of this, it's a fruit or something that's in their desserts. So yeah, I enjoyed this tremendously. And yes, laughing out loud uproariously is a risk. Listening to these audiobooks on the road, be prepared for British accents.
There you go, guys. This could be a dangerous thrill ride.
Don't listen to this audiobook on your Christmas road trip with your kids in the car.
Oh, yeah. Unless you got cool kids. Who knows?
Teenagers.
There you go.
That's all the questions I can think of.
It seems like a very fun, like, twist on a nice Christmas read. Because I feel like there's so many out there that it's hard to get, like, a new take on them. So
Terry Pratchett is very good at a twist
on... Little twist.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Now, here's a real question for you, because I know a lot of people, when they think about Christmas stories, think about, like, your traditional Hallmark movies and stuff like that. Would somebody from, like, that audience enjoy this, or is it too far out there?
Too alternative.
This book does not have a lot of sweet in it, in the sense that some Hallmark movies appear to have been shot through an amber lens, and they're dripping syrup and sweetness
candlelight
and light
everywhere.
And very gentle relationships. If that is your cup of tea, this is not your book. This book is more adventure. There's some anger. There's some rage. There's some, I mean, they're trying to thwart an assassin. So this is, if Die Hard is your Christmas cup of tea.
This is a great Christmas book for you.
This might be a Christmas book for you.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much for bringing us our holiday special episode. And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.